the Making Up the Numbers podcast.
Making Up the Numbers podcast is sponsored by Hope Technology, Revolution Bike Park, and the world's finest independent mountain bike magazine, Single Track. Hello and welcome to the very first Making Up the Numbers podcast. My name's George Thompson and I write for Single Track magazine, covering the UK downhill race scene in the form of the Making Up the Numbers blog. Co-hosting these podcasts with me will be my teammate on the Making Up the Numbers race team, 2016 BDS Grants Veteran Series winner, and the only person I know who swears he goes faster if he has a few glasses of red wine. A few bottles of red wine the night before a race on Richard Binns.
Hello.
And why are we doing a podcast? Well, there's some really good ones out there already, but in the main, they're pretty autobiographical. And anyone who's followed the blog on Single Track will know that what we're really interested in is the racing. So after each round of the World Cup, we're going to be getting together with one of the riders who was there to find out a little bit more about what went down. And what a race we had this weekend out in Maribor to kick us off. And joining us in the studio tonight is the man who qualified 12th, Wales' very own Joe Breeden. Not a bad start to the season, Joe?
No, not bad at all. Great qualifier, just shame I messed it up in the finals, but it's how it is.
You are Welsh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm Welsh. Well,
you don't sound very Welsh.
No, I know, that's what everyone says. So my parents are both English, but I class myself as Welsh because I was born in Wales and I speak Welsh.
Where were you born?
I've lived in Wales my whole life, so I just prefer to be Welsh than English, to be honest with you.
Cool.
Yeah.
Before we get cracking, there's a reason why you're our first guest. You know why?
Not really, no.
No? All right, so this time last year...
Oh, okay, yeah. I do remember why, yeah.
This time last year, I went to Revolution, and I remember seeing you. Was it before the first World Cup or after?
No, it was before the first World Cup. It was pre-season, around March time it was.
And I asked you who you thought would win the World Cup series, and you said...
Amaro Pierron.
Yeah, and I distinctly remember that because I remember travelling home and ringing Binsey and saying, Joe Breeden thinks I'm Harry Pierron will win the World Cup.
I didn't even know who he was.
Yeah.
How did you see that? Where did you see him?
So I knew he'd had the pace the last couple of years I've seen. He had like a first podium at Lourdes and then broke both his arms. So that set him back for a while. And then in the pre-season of last year, I seen he... I think it was a Portuguese Cup or something where he went out and crashed and still smoked everyone. And after that, when you asked me that question, who do I think is going to win the overall? Yeah. I just thought, well, Pierron looks amazing. I think he's got the ability. I just thought that last year might have been his year, and sure it was. So cool. it was a random one for me to say that because he was... had never been anywhere near winning an overall before that year, and he was definitely the underdog. But.
So, first question, who's going to win this year?
I'd probably say, well, not Amaro Pierron, not this year. My money's on Danny Hart, to be honest.
Yeah.
Not quite such an underdog like Pierron last year, but, yeah, I just, for some reason, I think it's Danny Hart's year.
You're good at this, though, aren't you? Didn't you pick the... Supercross or something as well?
Yeah, Supercross last year. I will follow that quite heavily, and someone asked me who I thought was going to win that, and I said Jason Anderson, and sure enough he did. So it's pretty weird, it freaks me out a little bit. Not to say I'm going to be right this time, I'm not.
How are you doing on the Fantasy League?
Yeah, to be honest, my first round was terrible, like 555th or something like that.
Oh no, we'll come on to that in a little bit. We've got a question about that.
Okay.
Before we get started on the first World Cup of the season, let's just go back a little bit further. You're a second year elite now, right?
Yeah.
But you had a really tough gig in juniors. Both seasons with Matt Walker and Finn Isles.
Yeah, didn't
How was
easy.
That?
Good and bad. So if it wasn't, well, you can't really say this, but if it wasn't for Matt Walker, I'd be like 3-time national champion. I'd be junior world champion. I'd have won the British overall like 3 times. Yeah. So in that respect, very difficult, but simply because I had to charge so hard to try and win any of these races because them boys were just so fast, it's... pushed me on way more, and for sure I wouldn't be the same rider today without having to push so hard against them boys.
Did Finn do one season completely undefeated, or am I making that up?
No, I don't think so.
No?
It wasn't far off, but definitely didn't. I think it was maybe... I think it was maybe the second year junior won every World Cup, and then crashed at World Champs.
And you got...
That was the only one, and I swooped in instead. Yeah.
You got a silver medal.
Yeah, so unfortunately it wasn't gold, but again, it was Matt Walker that took that away from me.
And look at him now, he's doing well.
Yeah,
so...
Then you smashed yourself up.
Yeah, so shortly after World Champs as a last year junior, it was a great season for me, and we literally just went for a team meeting just to discuss how the year went and how we wanted to progress things into the next year. And literally we went out for a pedal as a team after, and I was messing about and ended up shattered my heel and split my kneecap in two.
I've seen the video, it didn't look like a pedal. Were you showing off?
Yeah, the camera's out, and I was after a bit of an Insta banger, so
always the case.
Yeah. What was it? It was a massive, was it a big hook or something?
No, it was basically a jump out of a corner, land in a manual, and you hold the manual for about 100 metres or so, or 50 metres or so, and then drop it on the lip of a takeoff, and it was like a 20-foot jump or something, and I was trying to then land that in a manual as well, and to be honest, I don't know what's going through my mind. I don't know why I thought I should even try it.
Do you land many jumps to a manual?
Sounds like us. Yeah. Whereabouts was it?
It was in the Forest of Dean. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's crazy. You did the whole season basically uninjured, and I come home to the Forest of Dean where you think, oh, I'm just going to mess about it. And
it's pretty flat, isn't it, really, the Forest of Dean?
Yeah. Yeah, but ended up being the biggest injury in my life.
But so. I remember, like, even by the middle of last season, the muscle wastage, you put a picture on Instagram, it was huge. How did it affect your season last year?
It was for sure extremely challenging. I did, my injury happened in, I think, December or end of November, the off season leading up to the last year. And I was off the bike for 6 months, started racing after 7 months. And when I returned, my leg was still 35% weaker than my right leg. And I suffered from that quite badly throughout the year. Came back and raced the first national. I'd only been on the bike for, I think, 2 weeks.
But you did really well, didn't you?
Yeah, I went extremely well.
I remember Fort William.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Fourth place in the, a lot of World Cup riders were there getting ready for the World Cup.
So what were you thinking after that? I'm fine with just one leg.
Well, yeah, I thought that. I'll be able to handle this, be able to cope with it. More that weekend, I'd say it was just my mentality. I don't know, I was just really hungry for it for some reason. But after that, unfortunately, from doing that weekend, my leg really suffered and I couldn't do anything leading up to the World Cup. So I had 3 weeks of just recovering it, doing nothing because it was... I basically had like swelling in the back of my knee from it where it was getting a trapped fat pad or something like that in between the joint. So I shouldn't have raced that early, really, but I came back and suffered from it after that. And it did affect me for the whole year, really, but I still managed to push on towards the end of the year, and luckily this winter I've had time to fully sort it. So
that's what I was going to ask next. So coming into this season, you're back on Intense Racing UK.
Yeah.
Good off-season, you're working with Alan Milway, right?
Yeah, that's it. Alan Milway's my coach, so it's been a very different off season to last year. Last year was just trying to get back to where I was, and we never even managed that. But this year, now I've had a little surgery just after the season straight away to take some screws out and just a bit of bone graft to make it all a bit smoother in there. And then since then, we've been absolutely smashing the rehab and got back to pretty much 100%.
Do you think about crashing again when you?
A lot of people have said, like, does it not really affect your confidence, thinking that it could happen again? But to be honest, it hasn't really affected me in a bad way. It's just made me more aware of how easily things can happen and how quickly things can change.
Yeah.
But I'll still commit the same and maybe just think about it a bit more first.
You have to, though, don't you?
100%.
If you want to win.
Yeah, if you want to make a career out of it, you can't afford to be out with injuries every year. It's just no one will want to sign you and it's not going to pay off, so now you have to be clever about it for sure.
So is the leg fully fixed now, or are you still working on it?
I can't say fully fixed. It's still noticeably smaller, but we can put out like left to right power is the same. I struggle mainly with track walk, to be honest. On the bike, I don't notice it at all, but on track walk, walking down hills, my knee still suffers, and the foot hasn't got the movement it did. That like spasms up at night sometimes after riding or track walking, but on the bike it doesn't affect me, not at all really.
Sweet. So onto the bike, talk us through about your racing this season. Intense M29, yeah?
Yeah.
But different sponsors to Intense Factory Racing.
Yeah, so in the last couple of years, prior to this one, we've basically replicated the factory team, the Intense Factory team, that is. But this year it's changed a bit with Gwyn moving in and a load of the sponsors changed around. We're not running an identical setup to them anymore.
So what are you running?
So they've got, I think it's E13 wheels and stuff, and we've got obviously still the Envy and the Chris King hubs. We've got Unite chain guides, which was new for this year as well.
You had some E13 wheels, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Didn't you have to take them? E13 used to come to all the nationals, didn't they?
Yeah, and repair stuff.
Mainly chain guards that used to get smashed.
And Binsey took him his wheel once and said, this free hub's gone. And the guy opened it up and he went, there was like bits of grass in there, you know, like wound round and stuff. And the guy went, this is due to a lack of maintenance.
Did he still replace it though?
He replaced it. It
was
good.
Well, that's it what was good. It was good.
Sorry, say again, you're on E13 wheels.
No, we're not, sorry. So factory team are now on E13. We stick with Envy, which I'm very happy with, to be honest.
Yeah.
Chris King, again, which is a bit of a dream setup, wheels-wise.
Are you gluing tyres onto Envy rims?
No, we're not. We don't need to do that, no chance. Never blown one off an Envy in my life. I know of a couple of teams actually having problems with that at the weekend. And they literally had to glue them on to the rim.
Yeah, I saw on a video, was Danny gluing them?
I don't know if Danny was or not. No.
Somebody, I saw a video of some pity.
Yeah, who was it? I seen that as well.
Yeah.
Oh, God knows who that was.
Was it Minar gluing them?
No, I don't think it was Minar. Oh, no, it might have been.
Yeah, I think it was. It was the Syndicate.
Yeah, it was the Syndicate. Yeah, you're all right. Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the Syndicate boys, not sure who. Yeah,
cool. So, what size frame are you on?
I'm personally running an XL.
And you're what height?
I'm 6'2". Yeah, it feels I got the standard cup in it, so it's just normal reach. And it feels, to be honest, amazing. Been 6'2", used to be quite hard to find a bike that fits right. You've got the same problem, eh?
Try being 6'7".
So you know exactly what it's like. And when the M29 XL came out, that was perfect for me.
Yeah.
I know Nico Mullally runs, he's 6', so 2 inches shorter than me, and he's running the extra large still with a 6mm reach further forward.
Wow.
So he's made it even bigger, but
to be honest, I haven't tried it. Isn't he? And he's only 5'10", isn't he?
I think Gwyn was playing between a large and an extra large. With the extra large frame, he was running the headset 6mm back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But now I think he's running he set up with the large frame at the weekend with the headset forward. So he's definitely been playing around with that a lot. And I think he set up with the large now, just reach forward.
And are you on air or coil shock?
I'm on coil, yeah. Me and both my teammates are on coil. I know Gwyn's on air, but then Nico and Jack Morris are still on coil, so it's just Gwyn on the air shot there. He's been running them for years.
He's always had air, though, hasn't he? On all the bikes.
And do you know your setup if I say how many volume spaces you got in what?
Yeah.
Oh, no, obviously, and in your forks, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Go on, then. What's your forks?
Okay, so I've just made, at Maribor actually, I've made some drastic changes really, because it's a bit of a shock coming from the UK. It's a lot faster, a lot wider, so much rougher. So I run 6 volume spaces in the fork. I was running 78 PSI, I went up to 80 at the weekend just because it was so rough. And
can you feel that 2 PSI?
Yeah.
Can you?
Yeah.
You're on forks, are you? Yeah,
49s. Yeah, it's definitely noticeable.
6 volume, how many are we? I think I've got 3 and...
4 standard.
I think I've got quite a lot, and I think I've got 6. Yeah.
I was running 4, just with a lot of low-speed wound on and high-speed wound on to make up for it, but that was felt so... Like, it was progressive enough for me, but it was so harsh on my body. My arms and my hands was just a really rough ride, and I couldn't, when I got to the bigger European tracks, I literally couldn't hold on, so I had to make the change.
So, you know, like in the off season here, you're riding and you're setting the bike up, obviously. Can you set it up for a World Cup, or is it when you get there, you know, it is another 5% that you just can't get in the, you know, in the mindset of
doing it? I know exactly what you mean, and it is the case. You Like, I haven't been outside of the UK this winter training. And from all the testing I've done in the UK, I've got the bike feeling amazing. But as soon as I went to Maribor, it was a different ball game, and I had to change the whole bike setup because, I mean, there's just nowhere in the UK where you can replicate what we have to race internationally. I mean, Fort William is a good test zone, but in the winter we can't ride there.
No.
So, yeah, it's a massive change. And, like, as I said, my setup felt great in the UK.
Yeah.
It was fast. I felt happy with it. But then when I got to, as I say, Maribor last weekend, there was just no chance I could run that setup. To start with, I couldn't hold on, and, things were happening which really shouldn't have been.
Mm-hmm. So I heard a rumour that you didn't ride downhill for ages in the off-season because you were on the 650B bike last season. And you almost like wanted to, you knew you were going to be on 29 this season. Yeah. And you almost like, you wanted to forget how it felt. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, where'd you hear that from?
I don't know.
He's got spies.
I don't know. Somebody told
he's
me.
He's got contacts.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's true. There was a couple of reasons behind that. At the end of the season, I always like a bit of time to just sack the downhill bike off for a bit.
Yeah.
The other reason was I actually had surgery, so I couldn't ride for a couple of months. And also, my M29 didn't come until January, so I wasn't motivated or didn't see the benefits of riding my old bike because I wouldn't be riding that for the season coming. So
fair enough.
I just rode the trail bike and tried to
motivate. Is that 29?
Yeah, that's 29. That's a 29-inch carbine. So yeah, I just messed around with that until I got the M29.
And how are you finding the M29?
Absolutely amazing, yeah. Absolutely loving it. I love the M16, to be honest. It was always a little too small. I made that as long as I could with the 6mm reach in as well. But the M29 fits perfectly. Obviously, the suspension platform's completely different as well. But no, I'm just so pleased with the whole thing.
More importantly, haven't you had to go on their new e-bike?
No, I haven't actually. But my team manager, Ollie Morris,
love e-bikes.
He's got one and he does not shut up about it. He's like, honestly, does not shut up.
They're amazing. Yeah.
Since Binsey got one, and the only thing he talks about is his e-bike.
Yeah, exactly.
Now.
Honestly, just amazing. I do think it is the future, to be honest. I think it's amazing. But no, Ollie Morris literally doesn't shut his mouth. So I'm gagging for one, to be honest.
So, is there anything special on the bike that you're really picky about?
It's not particularly nothing special, I wouldn't say, but a bite point on the brakes for me is like it has to be as I want it, or I'm not confident riding.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, I haven't got any strange little phobias or anything like that about any setups really. Couldn't mention anything really.
And are you like privy to anything the factory team are doing? Do you know Gwyn's settings and stuff?
No, I think getting hold of Gwyn's settings is probably quite a hard one. We used to be pretty close with the factory team.
Yeah.
But now it's become more Gwyn's thing. Yeah, they're still really helpful and great to us, but it's a bit more distant than it used to be. I went over at the weekend, actually. I spoke to Nico and Jack, and they were both... Gwyn wasn't there at the time, so I'm not sure, but they were both really helpful, and Jack actually sent me through his shock settings so I could have a look and have a play around with something like that as well.
Cool.
We do know about pretty much what they're on, but obviously...
He's pretty tall like you, isn't he?
Yeah, he must be 6'3",
right.
Or maybe even more. But again, his setup's going to be very different to most others because he just has the bars like...
Really high.
So.
He inspires me to keep making the bars higher. Yeah,
he makes it look good anyway. He makes it go fast, so it can't be so bad.
So on to the race then. Have you raced Maribor before?
No, never. Before my time, that place.
But you went out before and did the IXS the weekend before.
Oh, yeah. So, sorry. Yeah, I raced it the weekend before, but before then, never been out there.
And how was that? How was the IXS?
Amazing.
Was it the same track?
Pretty much. It starts at the same spot and it finishes at the same spot. And I would probably say it's about 60% the same.
Did we have that rock garden in?
The rock garden was in, but it was just, we did the top of it and then went straight. Whereas at the World Cup, you wiggled all the way down the whole thing. So it's just little changes like that. It'd be little like different bus stops or a couple of new loamy sections for the World Cup. But from top to bottom, like it was pretty much went down the same yeah. way, and it was some of the same parts.
Is there loads of tracks to choose from there, or is it Fort William like one track, really?
It's a bit like Fort William, really. Yeah. There's one downhill track that you could race. There's then like a blue and a red, but there's no chance you would ever race that. It's more of a...
I dreamed that there'd be a race on the blue, you know.
Yeah. I just runs down it and I'll fucking can't be any more
George's
thankful.
Favourite track is the one in Portugal, I think I raced with you about 2015, was it? Yeah. The one that follows the fire road.
Oh,
what's the it battle called?
I can't remember what
it's called. The first one, the first Portuguese one.
Pampelosa?
Yeah.
No, it's not Pampelosa.
Oh, the one in Algarve.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's
near
it
Lagos.
It's got like a water jump in it. It's basically just like a BMX track.
Yeah, yeah.
And it goes all the way
down. Like a couple years. I forgot what it's called there.
Oh, I can't remember. I've got it as well. Do you think it's like an advantage getting out there racing the track the weekend before? Or because I looked at like the people who'd done well this weekend, and the top 10 at the World Cup, 7 of them had raced the week before.
Okay.
And 6 of them finished in the top 10. And the only one who didn't was Gwyn, who didn't start.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like
the ones
who didn't were Loic, Amaury and Laurie.
Yeah.
They're the only ones who ended up in the top 10 this week.
Yeah, yeah. I personally went out because I thought it was beneficial. When I started practice of the World Cup, I already knew half the track, so I was, you know, pretty fast straight off. And I think it was beneficial. But I know I spoke to a few riders, and I spoke to Laurie Greenland, and he said, you know, he wants to get to the World Cup and be real excited for the track, and he wants to, you know, be fresh with it and not bored of it. So his reason was that he didn't want to get bored of it by racing it the weekend before, which I can completely understand. But for me, I wouldn't get bored of it anyway. So
no,
it just depends who you are and how you go about things, really.
We did the Hamsterley. Well, I did the Hamsterley race a few weeks ago, and it was the first time I think I've ever known every rock and every route and where I was going at every point on the track.
Yeah, because it was quite short, was it?
And it was like my best ever result.
Oh,
it was sixth. Yeah, and I was like, this is what I want. I want to know like this.
Yeah.
It was also short, so there wasn't that much.
No, I'm very much like that. I want to know exactly where I'm going and every rock and route I can on the track.
So track walk, talk us through the track. I mean, to us, it looked like it was basically two sections split by a fire road roughly halfway just after a rock garden. Is that how you split it up?
Yeah, pretty much. The halfway point is around the fire road just after the rock garden. I think it's just slightly after that, or maybe slightly before, something like that. And yeah, you've got the top section where you got that grass turn, which was new for the World Cup, and you go into the woods, and it was a shame they didn't show the first bit on the live feed, actually, because when you would have seen we went into the woods and we disappeared out of shot. But that was one of my favourite sections. There was like, well, first jump into the woods, and then you did like this big natural double around a corner, and then there was like a double, you could triple it into a really fast left, and that was one of the fastest, like, well, you gnarliest parts of the track when you hit it at race speed. So it's a shame they didn't show that bit on the coverage, but so you had that at the top anyway, and then basically everything you've seen on the live feed from there on. They covered the rest of the track then.
So which was, I mean, obviously to us, like, the rock garden looks really gnarly, but to you as a racer, which bit was the hardest bit?
Like all those compressions after the fire road.
After the fire road, we call it compression alley, because it was just like you were just sumping out every 10 seconds, and there was no real way around it, to be honest. I'd say that the rock garden was definitely the most technical in terms of what was going on, and there was so many different lines there that it was crazy to try and choose which you wanted to stick with.
What was your line through there?
I went straight from top to bottom, and to be honest, I didn't play with anything else all weekend because I was pretty settled with that. I looked at every option in track walk and at the start of practice on day one, but no, I just settled for going flat out through the middle, to be honest.
And was
shortest route.
Was exit speed, I think they said on the commentary, exit speed was the most important?
Yeah, you could argue that for sure. Exit speed was vital, because after you exited the rock garden, you hit that left, which you didn't break into. And then after that left, there was got to be probably 100 metres straight, which was pretty much flat. So exit speed was vital, but I felt that I could still carry good exit speed even from the middle.
So weirdly, I think they displayed a graphic for the rock garden, and during it was during Zabchek's run, and at that point I remember the 1-2-3-4 through there, the fastest four, were also the 1-2-3-4 at the bottom.
Oh, okay.
Which meant that the Rock Garden, it didn't look like it was the deciding factor, kind of, but
I remember seeing that.
Yeah.
I think it was one of the spots on the track where you could make up or lose time on other people.
Right.
Because of lines, and two, because of how technical it was those who really committed and knew exactly where they were going and had the ability to carry that out would make time up on the others, whereas, you know, some of the other corners or sections, everyone can ride it off the brakes or everyone's on the same line, so there's not a vast majority of time difference.
So
whereas the Rock Garden, there could be, for sure.
It was dry at this point, your track walk.
Yeah.
You knew rain was coming. Was rain forecast for the quali or for the race?
So it was hard to tell because no one actually knew. At the start of the weekend, what I seen was dry first practice day, and that was pretty certain. And then about 50% chance of rain on the Saturday and about 50% chance of rain on the Sunday. So we didn't know what it was going to be.
Yeah.
When we were practicing, we had to practice dry and wet lines, or at least look for dry and wet lines.
That's what I was going to ask you. When you were there, was it always in the back of your mind, I'll do this line if it's wet and this line if it's dry, or do you just go same line but I'll just go a bit slower?
I suppose it depends who you are, but for me, I was definitely looking for dry and wet lines. And if I didn't think there was, I couldn't decide between, say, a technical inside or a flat out outside, I'd just choose the flat out outside because I knew that if it rained, then that would be the better option anyway.
Yeah.
So to be honest, for me, when it rained, I just stuck to all my lines because I knew they were lines that would be also fine in the wet. If there was something which was way faster that you could ride in the dry, then I definitely would have hit that. But in this case, I don't think there was many lines that were wet or dry. I mean, the fastest one was pretty much the same for both, really.
So practice, did you change anything on the bike, or did you leave it how it had been for the IXS?
Well, to be honest, the time I made my drastic suspension changes was after the first IXS. That's when I come to realise that I can't hold on.
You'd done quite well in the IXS though, didn't you?
Yeah, all right. It wasn't...
Was it sixth in the small final?
Yeah, sixth in the small final, but I wasn't... Yeah, it was all right, but I wasn't, you know, happy with that, to be honest.
Yeah.
But we learnt a lot, and how crazy it sounds, like, I went and did a couple of days testing in the week leading up to the World Cup, so just a few days
there.
Could you
raise the same track in between the IXS and...
No, it wasn't allowed. We had to go and find some other stuff down the same hill.
Okay.
And changed the bike completely. I went up from a 450 spring rate on the back to a 5... I ended up racing on a 525.
Wow. That's why I'm on a 525.
Yeah, we had a different shim stack in the shock, and a lot of difference with the compression dials on the shock.
Yeah.
So I ended up racing a completely different setup for the world race, and it sounds mental, but that's what it had to be, really, I'm afraid.
Mm. So talk us through practice. Do you know how many runs you got in?
First day I did 5, I think.
Yeah. Did you do time training?
No, I didn't have time training because I wasn't in the top 60 overall from last year. So.
Right. I was wondering, because I saw that like there were 60 people with times or whatever.
Yeah, it's only top 60 get it. So we have, in A practice, we have a 3-hour slot. And then after that, there's like a half-hour break, I think. And then another hour and a half for just time training, which is top 60 men from last year. It would have been for this round. Top 5 women, or maybe top 10 women, and top 10 juniors. So I wasn't in that. So I just had the 3 hours, which is quite tight, really.
Yeah.
Spaced it out for 5 runs, which, to be honest, I wouldn't want to do many more because I'd be physically too tired.
And you do them all full tilt, don't you? They are all...
No, not at all.
Do you know?
No. So
you must do a slow one to begin with, just to check
100%.
It out. And...
First one's like I just dribble down and try and hit all my lines and stop and look for different lines, and... Second run, I'll do a similar thing, but try in different lines. And then kind of around the third run, I'll try and hook up with a faster rider or a fast rider. In this case, it was Charlie Hatton at the weekend, where I just went in behind him and tried a couple of different lines opposite to him to see what worked, what didn't work, and we'd speak about it at the bottom. And then fourth, fifth run, I'd break it down into like a top split and a bottom split, or maybe sometimes 3 different spots. And I'd just start riding then at more of a race pace. So you build up throughout the day with the intention of getting up to race pace by midday the next day for qualifying.
And what tyres were you running?
DHR2s, Maxxis DHR2s back and front for me. Yeah. 24 PSI in the front and 27 in the back, which I dropped to 23 and 26 when it rained. But that, for me, on that track was pretty perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, there's a couple of boys chucked a shorty out or the equivalent, and I don't think any of them stuck with it, to be honest.
No.
I think a few boys did for when it rained, but I was happy on the DHRs for then as well, because it was quite a hard pack, and on the routes and stuff, it wasn't claggy, the mud wasn't claggy. Like, I didn't see a need for a spike or anything like that.
Cool. So rain came down, was it just before quali?
Yeah, so it was pretty just... like, why does this happen now? It's crazy. Everyone's practicing the dry.
Were you up the hill already, or were you?
No, I wasn't. So juniors had done their quali in the dry. Women had done theirs in the dry. I'm pretty sure women was dry anyway. And then just before the men started, it started absolutely hailing it down, like flat out rain. Couldn't have been any heavier.
Right.
So by the time elite started, everyone had a wet track.
Mm-hmm. So was it pretty even for everyone, or was it that some people had it worse than others?
Some people had it slightly worse than others, I would say. The track was definitely soaked from the start of when elites go down, but maybe the first few riders maybe took the just top layer of mud off, which could have been a bit slicker.
Yeah.
The other thing to take into account was some riders had to actually race in the rain, so they'd have some specks of rain on the goggles and stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas I think it stopped actually raining by towards the end of qualifying.
I think, did Matt Walker crash on that second corner?
Yeah.
Because Kieran, our teammate, Kieran Davis, shout out to Kieran, by the way, he crashed there as well, I think.
The same one?
Yeah. Yeah.
What happened to him in finals? Or he in didn't qualifying? Make, he didn't make finish?
It. No, he flatted, I think. He crashed there and then he flatted as well.
I see. Yeah, it was kind of a guessing game for everyone because no one had practiced it in the wet.
Yeah.
We it didn't rain, so we couldn't. So coming into qualifying, it was literally guesswork. You had to look far ahead, analyse what it looked like and make a
call on the fly.
Exactly that.
Did you say you changed the tyre pressures?
I just went down 1 PSI back and front.
One PSI. Like you would know the difference. We need Neil here.
Our teammate Neil's like really.
You know Neil White.
He's very picky about
picky
it.
With
but
all that.
You know, I ride the same. But if somebody was to mess with my settings after a whole day of riding on those settings, I'd think it was just normal.
You wouldn't notice. Yeah.
No. So there's an immense pressure to qualify now. You know, we're down to just 60.
Crazy,
60 riders making it through. What's your view on that?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily a bad thing nor a good thing. I mean, it seems ridiculous that the likes of Greg Menard didn't make the final. Yeah. I think there was probably 10 full-time factory riders, professional riders who didn't. Well, probably more than that, who didn't make it into the final. I know Greg Williamson didn't make it in.
I wonder if they'll look at it now.
Phil Atwill, Greg Menard, none of them made it in.
Mm. If it happens again, I wonder if they'll look at it at the end.
It happened all last year. All last year, you could go down the list outside the top 16. You'd probably be able to pick 10 professional riders who haven't made it in.
Is it to do with the TV, though? Because then they would have to, between the women and the men's races, they would have to, you know...
To be honest, I'm not sure exactly what the crack with it is. I think they're just trying to make it more of an elitist sport.
Mm-hmm.
I think they think that viewers only want to see the top riders, so why should we let anyone else race, let's just exclude them out. But what's happened is the top riders have started to get excluded because you cannot afford to make a mistake because you won't crash or you won't qualify. Whereas you used to be able to, like some Manal or any of the top riders would be able to have a crash, a little crash, get back up and still qualify, but now you can't do that because it's so tight. And especially there have been more fast riders than ever, I'd say. It's just ridiculously tight.
So talk us through your quali.
Yeah, scary. Obviously, when I see the rain come down, it is like I just didn't freak out, but it's the pressure doubles almost because you know it's so unpredictable. Things can happen so much easier. Like the likelihood of crashing probably increases like 50%. So I was just trying to, to be honest, I planned to ride it like it was dry and deal with it as it comes. And it, for me, it worked out. but for others, they ended up in the bushes and not qualifying. So I took the risk, and for me, it paid off.
Any dodgy moments? Or?
Yeah, there was a couple. I don't know if you've seen, but I posted the other day a video of me in the second corner, and it was like full speedway. Almost went down the second corner, and then I had a bit of a moment down the bottom as well. But other than that, it was all right. I think being Welsh, spending the whole winter in the UK, we kind of have to deal with the rain quite often.
Was it just like a wet Wednesday at Revolution?
Yeah, pretty much exactly. So it was quite familiar to me.
Everyone who rides there quite a lot, I noticed, did do quite well in it. Yeah. You know, Charlie Atten, Brett and Joe Smith, everybody did okay in quality.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. I mean, it was literally, you just had to guess as you went down. And so what was weird is some bits in the woods were actually dry, but you didn't know until you got there. So you really had to scan ahead and try and see what it was like. Because some spots were just like ice. So.
What was the hardest bit in the wet? Was it the kind of off-camber sections or... Was it the bits that were out in the open that took the water?
It was the bits out in the open that didn't necessarily take the water, but the more bike parky bits that were hard pack, it just went like ice. It just went real greasy. The rock garden I personally didn't find too bad. It had like a little bit of mud and water on top. But for me, I was going straight, so I didn't have to turn on any of it. I just bombed through it. Yeah. But the hard pack stuff in the open was just lethal. There was bits in the woods where it was still dry loam because the rain hadn't got through.
But
the bits in the open were savage.
Was it a shock to you that Mark Wallace won quali?
Yeah, you could say it was a shock to everyone, I think. He's always there, top 10 somewhere, which is incredible, but to go and win, I think maybe by a decent margin as well, is pretty impressive. I mean, when it rains, it's... So much more unpredictable, and people don't know how hard they can push anymore. Yeah. So those riders who are so good at pushing the edge and riding at the limit, they don't know where that is anymore. So it all just starts to get real messy and just mixes things up quite a lot. But no, fair play to him. He obviously had a really good run and wasn't too scared or shitting himself like everyone else.
But you're 12.
Yeah, 12th place qualifier for me, which I was stoked with, to be honest. It was really good.
Best ever? Is that
best ever World Cup qualifier by a long way, yeah. I think 30th, I think, was the best before that, so kind of halved the number.
I was chuffed when I was watching it because you were top 20, isn't it, the live feed?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's gone up to the top 30 this year. Yeah. No? They've upped it by 10, yeah.
So, race day then. Did you wake up early? I bet you were... Bricking it, weren't you?
I wasn't too bad. Qualifying day is always the most nerve-wracking for me. I don't enjoy qualifying day. It's just a lot of pressure to qualify and things can slowly go wrong. It's like cracking open another beer, lad.
It's his secret drinking.
Yeah, trying to sign it under the table.
Just for the record, Joe hasn't got any beers in front of him. No. Do you want a water, Joe?
Yeah, water would be lovely, actually,
please.
You want some
please. Water?
Yeah.
You've got a few bottles in front of you, George.
Yeah. It's like fucking 16 there, I see, is it? Shame there's no camera.
Yeah. One day. Race day. How many practice runs did you get in?
I did two. So... It was actually still quite... we have a bit of a line on the race day morning because juniors practice and race before we even start practice.
Yeah.
So I think practice started for 11, went up the hill. It's still a bit greasy in a few spots, so I had to learn them. And the few lines had changed, a couple corners had blown out from the juniors race. And because it had rained the day before, quite a lot of things had changed. So I just dribbled down first run... looked at a couple sections, had to change a couple lines because of the changes throughout that morning and the rain.
Yeah.
And then second run, you've only got an hour, so you've got no more time than that. Second run, I just had to try and hit every line as close. Well, not race pace, but I was just shifting on it a good rate. But it was still a bit greasy, so I just didn't want to push the limit that much because I knew you could go down pretty easily and not even start finals.
So with the tyres, did you go back up a few PSI?
Yeah, I started that day on my dry setting, so I went 24, 27 in the tyres.
Still on the DHRs?
Still on the DHRs, didn't change them all weekend, yeah. I was happy with them.
You just very anything happy. Else? Or?
No, actually that morning I went at one click high speed on the shock. I don't know why, but I felt like I was blowing through that morning. I think maybe the holes got a bit bigger, or maybe I started riding a bit faster or something like that. But that was it. We kept the fork exactly the same and shock exactly the same, apart from that one click on the high speed.
Are we testing on Friday?
We're riding Stinnyog on Friday. Remember, if the holes are big, you go one click, what, on the high speed?
One click more on high speed.
Is that 116 more? One click more on or one click more off?
One click more on, so clockwise, adding compression.
If the holes are big, then remember that, yeah.
I will.
So have you been on the live feed before?
No, first time. There was a lot of firsts this weekend, last weekend for me. It was a great race, to be honest.
Yeah. What were you thinking when you were up there? Because you're up there with all the big dogs, really, aren't
you?
Yeah,
it was really...
Who was in front of you? Or behind you, I don't
know. God, I can't remember. But I remember warming up. I've never been that late in the day. I'm warming up and I've got Amaru Pierre on, who's just finished his warm-up, heading to the gate, and I've already started my warm-up at the top. So that's like a, oh God. And then I look to my left and there's Loic Bruni warming up at the same time as me. Right, I got Finn Owls, and there was just, Loris was straight in front of me as well. And Danny had already been there. It was Laurie. Yeah. So it's just crazy. I'm just there with literally all the top dogs.
Did it freak you out at all? Or?
No, not really. You can't focus on that. You've just got to focus on your process. And I didn't do anything differently. I just got in my zone and did my warm up.
You've done the hard work by getting there, haven't you? Qualifying. Yeah, like you said, exactly. You can just enjoy it almost.
Yeah. Exactly. And the other thing was, been on the live Red Bull TV live feed for the first time. There's God knows how many people watching that, but I know it's the second most highly viewed thing on Red Bull TV after festivals. So.
Right.
Obviously, a lot of people.
They released the stats for the World Championships, and it was ridiculous.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's their coverage
now. It's millions, it's a lot of millions.
Amazing. It's impressive.
So, iPod on for the warm-up. What do you listen to?
I do get very nervous. When I put my music on, I can handle the nerves. It's like a real weird thing for me. Without music, I hate life. Leading up to the race, as soon as I put my music in, I'm like, I just get this extra confidence, like that I think I'm the boss and all that.
Yeah.
It's a weird one for me, but if I got the right music on, then
what's the right music?
A mix of everything, really. I've got some hip hop, some trap, and some drum and bass. Is it mainly?
You big on the trap scene, Binzy?
Yeah,
I know what hip hop is. I don't know what the others are.
No, I've actually got a playlist on my Spotify account, which is just for racing.
Right.
So it's got a mixture of everything on there. I just put that on shuffle and deal with it.